scale. So things like itchy eyes, tickle in your throat, a small cough, those kind of things. But then when you have individuals who are highly sensitive, so if you think about people who have lung disorders like COPD or asthma, and even those with some heart conditions, it really can make breathing very, very difficult for them. It can exacerbate those situations and even put them in the emergency room or the hospital. And in those cases, they may experience things like tightness in their chest, severe shortness of air, and even some respiratory failure.
Right. So what are some ways that folks can reduce their exposure?
Great question. Really, first and foremost, it's all about just avoiding the irritants. And so, ways that we can do that, trying to limit the time that you're spending outdoors can be super helpful. So, when you think about, maybe being inside, having clean air filters, maybe having a room of your house that, is void of any other kind of internal pollutants, things like cigarette smoke. Candles, those things can even contribute to inside air pollution. So, making sure that you have a room, particularly your sleeping room, that is free of those. And then, of course, we do have individuals in the community that have to get out. They have to work in the environment. And so, for those individuals, it may be important that they wear something like an N95 tight fitting mask when they're out doing their daily activities. And then the other thing I would probably caution about is, I know that we have a lot of outdoor warriors that love to get out in Oregon, but really limiting exercise to maybe indoor when we have those high air quality alert days can be super helpful so that we're not exacerbating any kind of lung issues that they might be experiencing.
Are there certain alerts that folks can look for to make sure that like that's the time that they go inside and are being really careful?
Absolutely. So most of your weather and news outlets, they're going to provide air quality index updates on a daily basis. And those are going to be super helpful. What I recommend, especially if I'm doing education with patients, is that they check those air quality alerts on the daily basis. And they make sure that they're aware of what they mean. So a lot of times, I like to think of it like an expanded stoplight, right? So green is really, that's kind of when the air is great. There's no problems. There's no difficulty. We get into yellow and orange. We start to need to exercise a tad bit more caution. When we get to red, maroon, and purple, those are really the areas we're going to be super cautious about going outside and exposing ourselves to the smoke and the air pollution. Yeah, I think, it's just being cognizant of what's happening, being educated about the air quality, also making sure that you're protecting your loved ones as well, being advocates for your loved ones. Small children, they also can be vulnerable to air quality issues. So, you might think about yourself, if it's impacting you, it's probably going to be impacting your kiddos. So maybe even though it's summer and we're probably getting the last of the days before kids are back in school and those kind of things, we still might want to limit their time outdoors as well to protect their lungs.
Thank you so much, Melanie. I really appreciate your time.
You're listening to KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is James Kemp and Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to the interim evening news director, which is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Cheryl Denise.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Trigger warning. The following program contains accounts of suicide and other mental health topics.
Heartbreak times infinity, the devastating loss. These thoughts destroy my mind. Kill my will to live, piss the beating heart. Makes me wonder, is this life?
That was Hold On by Dr. Diane Kaufman, head of Create Resilience Youth Art Contest for Suicide Prevention. The contest is an outreach event for the Hold On campaign. It is free to enter and is open to Oregon youth ages 13 through 21. Entries are accepted through August 1st, with winners announced on September 10th, World Suicide Prevention Day.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I have here with me Dr. Diane Kaufman, head of Create Resilience Youth Art Contest for Suicide Prevention. Welcome, Dr. Kaufman. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be with you.
So first, will you tell me more about the Create Resilience Youth Art Contest?
Yes. So the Create Resilience Youth Art Contest is a way for youth, and it's so important for youth to step forward and us to give them an opportunity to share their ideas on how to improve youth mental health. So it gives them a platform. It can be part of a movement. It's a way to open that conversation up. And entries can be an essay, could be a poem, artwork, photography, a song, anything that's creative, whereby that young person is taking a vulnerable yet courageous step in saying, yes, this is important, and I want to share my ideas. As you mentioned, it's free to enter. I want to thank the Oregon Council of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. In parenthesis, I'm a retired child psychiatrist, but OCAP gave us funding for the cash awards for the contest, and they are sizable. It's $350 first prize, second $300, then $250, $250 honorable mentions, and Blick Art Materials is giving out four $25 gift certificates.
Nice. So how did the idea for the contest first come about?
Well, this goes back a number of years. I was then working as a child psychiatrist, and my young adult patient, she was in her early 20s, she told me that she had nearly hanged herself a few years prior. And of course, I thanked her for telling me now what was happening then, and was so glad she hadn't acted on it. But I also asked her, what was the obstacle that she hadn't told me a few years ago when she was my patient? Because I was always asking about mood and suicidality. And she told me that, quote, I didn't want you to take it seriously. And those words really profoundly impacted me. I wrote an essay, and I wasn't writing it for anyone else, but the essay was called If My Words Could Make a Difference. And it starts off, if I were having a heart attack, would I call myself crazy or would I call 911? And the entire essay is around why is there so much silent shame and stigma around mental health? And mental health is physical health. And to know the statistics around suicide, comparing it to, in a sense, a heart attack, that you could have a brain attack, meaning almost like a panic attack, a cut myself attack, a kill myself attack. And at the end of the essay, it says, you know, now that you know the truth and that help is available, and it also featured 988, don't become a statistic, right? Well, I ended up giving that essay to my patient. And then I also shared it with two of my teenage patients because I thought that it spoke to them in a unique way. And one of my patients told me she shared it with two of her high school teachers. And one of those teachers shared it, according to my patient, with every student in all their classes. Then I knew that this essay was valuable, needed to be spread in a good way. And it just so happened, and it's funny how the cosmos works, there was a grant from the Oregon Council for Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. And it was on, of course, youth mental health and collaboration. I happened to be a board member and a storyteller on ASHA International. ASHA submitted the grant. We received the grant, and then COVID struck within probably a week or two. So, you know, schools are closed, everything shut down. A couple of my own patients submitted if my words could make a difference, but nothing was happening. But I didn't give up on this project. In 2023, when I retired as a child psychiatrist, having hit the age of 70 that year, I founded the Hold On Campaign for Suicide Prevention, which uses the power of art to educate, connect, express, and heal. And it is a fiscally sponsored nonprofit. Well, ASHA ended up, after many years of such wonderful service, closing in, I believe it was October 2024. But we were able to roll over the money from the grant to the Hold On campaign. And then I reached out to the Oregon Council of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry and said, I think I have a very good idea, but I need your permission. I'd like to use the funding to make it into a contest. And they agreed. And then I had changed the name to Create Resilience Youth Art Contest. So that is the story, right, of perseverance since 2020.
This issue, suicide, is a major public health issue in Oregon and across the nation. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Maybe give me some statistics?
Yes. Yeah. So first I want to share with you, and I'm referring to a printout from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and they're quoting from the CDC. Okay. So the fact sheet that I'm looking at first, and I'm going to be telling you two fact sheets. So the fact sheet I'm looking at is about 2021 data from the CDC. Suicide was the 10th leading cause of death in Oregon and the second leading cause of death for ages 10 to 34, third leading for 35 to 44, and then I'll just give one more, sixth leading for 45 to 54. And it says 75% of firearm deaths were suicides, and 57% of all suicides were by firearms. Well, I just printed out a few minutes before we're meeting, right? An update. This fact sheet reports 2023 data, so it's 2 years later, from the CDC. Well, it used to be the 10th leading cause of death. Now it's our 8th leading cause of death. We're going in the wrong direction. So there, we have a problem, you know, in Oregon in terms of the frequency of death by suicide. And I don't think, I think that the populace would be shocked even to know it was the 10th leading cause of death, but now to know it's our 8th leading cause of death and the 2nd leading cause of death for young people.
What are some ways that folks can help prevent suicide?
Well, I think one thing is to open up the conversation about mental health and mental health well-being, not being afraid to use the word suicide or using other language to talk about that. You know, have you ever felt like not waking up in the morning? Did you ever feel, I just can't go on, right? Did you ever want to take yourself out? Have you ever thought about suicide? And, you know, many people think about, I don't want to wake up, right? I don't think that's such an uncommon thought to have. And also, a person does not have to have a psychiatric illness to die by suicide. And I think that's also something that we need to think about. So we need to open up that conversation and to especially talk about, let people know about the 988 number. The 988, now it's, I think, the third year that that's been in existence. The Oregon Health Authority has just launched an awareness campaign around 988. It was just last week on Wednesday that it was launched. They have all sorts of videos, print materials, free of charge. They have technical assistance to community organizations who want to promote 988. If your listeners go online at 988oregon.org, they'll find a whole host of information about 988. Hope is there, and there can be ways for a person to realize that things can get better. Most importantly, and that's why I have the name of my campaign is the Hold On campaign, is to not act on that suicidal thought. Because as long as we don't act on it, help is available. And what a person is experiencing, and I'm not denying the intensity of emotional pain and life stressors that may lead a person to have that thought, but it can be temporary, right? And if you die by suicide, you know, don't let your life be taken away by suicide, that's permanent, but the problem that you're facing is temporary.
Yeah, thank you. If you're willing to speak to it, would you tell me a little bit about your own experience with suicide and just how that's informed your work?
Yeah. So when I was in medical school, which is many, many decades ago, I was, in my 20s, and I attempted suicide. I was alone in my dorm room. I took an overdose of prescribed medication, which being a medical student, I knew that this could be fatal if I took too much of this pill, but that was my intention. I want to say that in that suicidal state of mind, and I'm going to speak personally, I was not thinking of anything else other than what I felt was unbearable pain. I wasn't thinking about my roommate, right? Who probably she was gone for the weekend, but she was coming back. I wasn't thinking about, oh my goodness, my roommate is going to see me dead in the dorm room. I wasn't thinking about my family. I wasn't thinking about my friends. I wasn't thinking about anyone at all other than myself. Now, someone could say, wow, how selfish, incredibly selfish. However, I would say that this was not a purposeful selfishness. This was part of a total constriction of thinking, right? It's like your thinking is zeroed in into one tiny dot, right? And what happened to me was that I had a fantasy that I would just fall asleep and just not wake up. However, that is not what happened, thankfully. I started feeling very, very sick. And I realized I'm not dying. I'm sick and I need help, right? So what I did was I took a taxi to my sister's home. And at that point, I must have told her what I did. And she took me to Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, because I was living at the East Coast at that point. I was admitted to the medical unit for a couple of days. Fortunately, I wasn't so severe that I had to go to the intensive care unit, but I possibly could have based on what I had taken. And while I was there, becoming stabilized, I remember being interviewed by the psychiatrist. I was there a couple of days by then. And I remember he asked me if I wanted to be admitted to the psychiatric unit. Now, at that point, I was no longer acutely suicidal. In fact, quite the contrary. It was like, okay, that happened. I want to forget that ever happened. I want to go back to being a medical student as soon as possible. But he asked me, and I was not acutely suicidal, so he could not involuntarily send me to the psychiatric unit. And I said, no, that I didn't want to be admitted. I believe that part of my reasoning was also that how can I be a psychiatrist if I've been admitted to a psych unit? Well, right, or I was mentally ill or emotionally so distressed that I tried to kill myself. I thought, oh no, no one's ever going to want to see me as a psychiatrist. Well, I'm living to tell the tale that I'm not suggesting people attempt to kill themselves, but I'm saying, yes, you can become a fine psychiatrist with a lot of empathy, right, from your own emotional experiences. Right. And years later, I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, which is episodes of depression and hypomania. And I've been in on and off during my life in therapy, and I've also been on some different medications in terms of mood stabilization. And I'm fortunate because that experience frightened me. And I think in a way that's healthy. It frightened me. And I knew that I was someone potentially that could cross the line into becoming actively suicidal and acting on it. And that was something I never wanted to do again. And so I've been able to take seriously what happened to me. Yeah, right. In contrast, in a way, what my patient had said, right, that I did take it seriously and tried a lot of self-care for myself. When I was in my 60s, I was attending a local conference, get a tap on the shoulder, and they say, oh, somebody on the panel did not show up, or, you know, something happened, right? And could you be on the panel? So I said, okay, I'll be on the panel. And I did not know that ASHA was sponsoring that panel. So I'm the last person to speak. But I noticed that the two teenagers and the parent next to me were all sharing their personal mental health stories. And I decided, there I am in my 60s, I decided that this was the time to share my story. And I spoke first about, you know, being a psychiatrist and risk factors and treatment. And then I took the deep dive and I spoke about my own life experiences.
I'm curious about the role that creativity has played in your healing process. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So I've always been someone to like to write, especially poetry. And when you're writing or creating, right, obviously you're not trying to kill yourself while you're writing. And the page or the canvas or the musical instrument can help express your feeling in a safe way. And it's not about, oh, I'm going to make something pretty, right? The creativity can be that raw emotion. And just, I find for myself that just expressing it in a crafted way, the best way that I feel that I'm able to express it, that there's something so satisfying in being able to look at it or hear it and say, yes, that's exactly the way that it's feeling. That's exactly the way that I'm thinking. And that creative expression doesn't have to be shared with anyone else, right? Although one could share it if you feel it's safe to share it with them, right? And also in the creative process, you may start off, or I'll just say I may start off with one idea, but in the process of creating, other ideas or other feelings may come, or other meanings may come through that creativity. So writing poetry, I found that I have a talent for lyrics, collaborating with artists, writing stories. This goes back many years before the Hold On campaign. I was at a arts and healing workshop in New York City and for my own healing. And the writing prompt was really interesting. It was sort of like a Carl Jung active imagination. They had us take three pieces of paper representing three parts of yourself, whatever that might be. And then with your non-dominant hand, which is my left hand, to scribble on the page without any intention. Just do a scribble. Then you look at the scribble and see if there's a glimmer of something there, a shape, an image, something. Look at it, pull it out, meaning add to it, draw more, quote, draw it out. Then title it, give it a name. And out of that experience, I wrote from first word to last word without one edit. So something just flew through me, right? I wrote a story called Bird That Wants to Fly, about a depressed bird walking by the winter carnival, about to step in a puddle, and sees the words, beautiful animal that I am, in the water. And by the end of the story, it meets a magical horse who takes the time to listen. And then the bird gives reasons why it can fly. Because the horse says, little bird, why are you walking, not flying? Doesn't it take longer that way? Right? And the bird eventually tells the horse, you know, I have beautiful wings, I can fly, etc. But rainstorms, snowstorms, children with rocks, men with shotguns, birds crashing into each other. And amazingly, my story inspired an opera. And by a composer named Michael Raphael, it was performed by Trilogy, an opera company in Newark, New Jersey. And a friend of the opera company is Danny Glover, the actor, and he narrated the story.
Is there any last instructions or invitations on people submitting?
Yes. So I want to tell everyone about how to submit to that contest, right? So I'm encouraging all listeners, if you yourself are between 13 and 21, or you're a parent or an aunt or a grandparent or a teacher or a member of a temple or church and you know young people, please let them know about the contest. I'm going to tell you how to do it two ways. If you go to the Hold On campaign website, which is www.hold holdoncampaign.org, there's a menu item that is Create Resilience. If you click on Create Resilience, the drop down is Youth Mental Health Campaign, and that's how you can submit to it. And also, it is www.holdoncampaign.org/youth-mental-health-campaign, right? And I would encourage people to look at that 9888 website, which I mentioned before, 988oregon.org. And please take a look at the Hold On Campaign website. We have internationally award-winning songs on suicide prevention. And music is something, too, that if a song might appeal to you, you can listen to that, right, 24/7, and it can strengthen you to have hope and to seek the help and the life that you deserve.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kaufman. I really appreciate your time and you sharing experiences and your words. Anything else?
And the song Hold On to Tomorrow, which you're soon going to be hearing, features the beautiful voice of Dustin Paul and the magnificent work of James Mano, who's the producer.
In the silence of the night, when we feel so all alone, violin strings cry out in memory, stories left untold. In the shadow of heartache, souls lost in despair. The cello sings of sorrow, each note a heavy weight. Symphony of heartache, a dance with grief. Yet even in darkest times, life's spirit yearns to be.